అనుజ్ఞానకులనం దాస్యాగనం జరా శివాకాయ శ్రీచైతన్యమనోష్టాంశాపిం వేదూతలే ప్రతీతానం పాదనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసుదేవ ఘోర భక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. So greetings from Vrindavan. I just got back from Puri yesterday. So it's great to be back with all of you after a break. Today, because I just kind of got back, and I'm just going to share with you some realizations I had, you know, at the Puri Yatra. And I think it'll be interesting. It may be sum up a little bit about what I say. It really was a wonderful yatra, and the goal of the yatra, which I stated at the beginning, and I think we successfully achieved, is to recreate Gaur Leela and have people experience what the devotees experienced during the time of Lord Chaitanya. And I really think that we got a taste of that. That experience. So that was our objective, to have people experience Gaur Leela. And the first important thing is Gaur Leela is a community. A community is a group of people that join together with a common interest. And which is, of course, in Gaur Leela, to serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But there's a sangha or community that serves one's interests better than one can serve by one's own selfish desires. Just like if you're in a temple or community, the community can serve your Krishna conscious interests better than you could do by being independent. And that's what community means. So we really try to establish that community by, first of all, organizing the yatra in a way that people would serve in every aspect so nicely. And when you're in a community, a partnership, a family, a community, a group that is focused on a common objective that serves the community, for example, Krishna consciousness. And all the aspects of Krishna consciousness, material and spiritual in a sense, then one is able to become, in a healthy way, somewhat vulnerable. In the sense that you don't have to put up your guard. When you're in a group that does not serve your interest and sometimes even harms your interest or threatens your interest, your real interest, you put up your guard. and you protect yourself, which may be a necessity, but at the same sense, it closes your heart to the experience of relationship and devotion. So that's what I see, is, and that's really the purpose of my retreat, because when you establish that community that's really dedicated to the people's interests, from their lodging to their food to their relationships to their care to their transportation to the quality of the katha, to the quality of the kirtan, then it really creates that mood by which people can advance in Krishna consciousness and experience that. Maybe late at night, I'm not as lucid as I want on this, but I'll keep on going. Hopefully it becomes clear. Let me just begin with the prayers. Om Ajana Timidam. That's, I said the prayers already. It shows that I'm disjointed from traffic, so I'm dedicated to giving. It was really a great experience. People felt that. So let me just give you a little summary of what I spoke on, which was the Shikshastakam. And I presented it in 5 days. And it's kind of interesting. Each time I present it, I'm able to present it in a shorter amount of time. When I come to New York, I present it in two classes. This was 5 classes. Mayapur, I presented in 8 classes. And in Davin, I think I took 2.5 weeks. So there's an author, Pasquale, who said, "I'm sorry what I wrote was so long, but I didn't have time to write it." And the concept is the deeper you realize something, the more succinct and profound you can present it. I often give the definition of realization that Prabhupada gave. The definition of realization that Prabhupada gave was the ability to communicate. And communication entails altering your presentation according to the frame of reference of the audience. That's why when I'm lecturing, I'm very hesitant to read something, because reading fixes you in a certain form that may be hard for that particular audience to appreciate when you read something. When you're speaking something and you have that sense of communication, then as you're presenting it, you can change. If the audience needs some humor, you may tell a joke. You need to explain. If you see the audience is not grasping something, you may explain it more carefully. So you can constantly reorder the form when you're lecturing. So communication means the ability to do that. You've learned something in a particular way by a teacher who has explained it according to your frame of reference. Now, you communicate it. You may not communicate it with a person. The person has the same exact frame of reference as you have. And therefore, it has to be carefully formed or changed. So Prabhupada made it very clear what communication, what realization is communication, because unless there's really a depth of understanding, the depth of understanding means that you see a truth so carefully that you can apply it in a variety of circumstances, which require a different strategy of communication, perhaps, with each teacher, or a different type of language for each. And someone who doesn't have that ability to communicate either keeps the message in the same form in which she's heard it, even though it's no longer communicative or relevant to the audience at hand, or the person may, in compassion, may try to branch out and make those people realize the message, but not having the realization as he is changing the form to accommodate the frame of reference, he's not able to keep the original message intact. And someone with realization is able to do that. He's able to communicate. I mean, because of the depth of understanding of that subject, he can make those, he can change the language, or he can reform the message. Message is always reformed. We reform the same message. Just think, the Bhagavatam was spoken in 4 verses, and then it was expanded into 18,000 verses. But still, when Prabhupada gave the Bhagavatam, he didn't just give the 18,000 verses, he gave a lot of purports. And when we speak, we just don't read and give Prabhupada's purport, we also explain it to communicate it to the audience. So this is realization, but when you really have a deep understanding of a subject, I think you can make it more and more succinct. And it's interesting, but I was able to explain the 8 verses in 5 days. Now, coming from the retreat, let me see if I can explain it in just another half hour, well, somewhat. The Shikshastakam, and this is really the point, the Shikshastakam is a summary of Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Of course, in the 20th chapter, at the end of his life, it's described that he's not just writing verses to communicate some philosophical understanding, but he's actually relishing those verses. He's relishing the Shikshastaka. And that's such that's how bhakti works. Because kirtan is the most important thing. What is kirtan? It's the enthusiasm with a experience that impels you to share it. And that's kirtan. When you have to impel it, you have to share it. And that's the nature of emotion. Emotion has to be expressed. Emotion just can't stay within the heart. You have to do something with it. So this is one very important point about bhakti. There has to be kirtan. You have to share your realizations. And in sharing them, you are relishing them. Because the expression of emotion is the intensification of emotion. The intensification of bhakti comes when sharing bhakti. And not just sharing it, but sharing it out of the impetus of a relishing bhakti. That's why one of the main Gita verses in Chaturshati Shloki Bhagavad Gita is Matshita Matshita Prana Bodhiyanta Astarasna. What are devotees? Matshika, Krishna is my heart. Matshika is my goal. Prana, Krishna is my life. That's a devotee. The resonance of Vrindavan in the Kali Lila is described, and yes, people have spouses, but they value their spouse because they have a relationship with Krishna. And that's what gives meaning to everything. Because what we are is in relationship to Krishna. Our real essence is to serve in relationship to Krishna. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya begins to relish this mood. And what is he actually relishing? He's relishing the remembrance he has of what has, of what is the cause of his attainment or fulfillment of his mission, which is to taste the highest love and distribute it. So he's meditating. He's meditating on that because he's in the Gambhira and he's experiencing the symptoms, actually, of Radharani. He's experiencing such depth of emotion. Similar to the emotion that Radha had. That's what he came to experience. He wanted to experience that level of love. So you see in the 20th chapter, at the end of the Chaitanya Bhagavat, he has achieved that. And in achieving that, he's reflecting on his life. And what has enabled him to come to this platform. And he's meditating on it in great appreciation. And he comes to the conclusion that it's Nam Sankirtan. That by chanting the holy name, especially with others, he has achieved this perfection. And then he's thinking with great respect and great love for Nam Prabhu, Krishna in the form of the holy name. The main impetus of love is the kindness or mercy of another. The Rishikam has received the kindness and mercy of the holy name, and his heart is bursting with love and appreciation for the holy name. And therefore, he is impelled to express that in the form of glorification. So he begins to glorify the holy name and relish Machita Metkata Bodhiyantas Kalasram. This is what the devotees do. Sundata Swakata Krishna Pudya Shravana Kirtana Hidantista Yavadini Divinoti Sarasitam. The devotees, Sundata Swakata, among themselves they chant Yoga Krishna. Among themselves they appreciate their love, the object of their love, which is Krishna, in this form, in the form of the holy name, which is the merciful incarnation. The name of Krishna is more merciful than the form. You have to go to the form of Krishna, but the name of Krishna comes to you. So he's relishing and reflecting on it, and then sharing this with his associates, and then begins to relish what he has composed before, which are the only eight verses that he has composed, which is called the Sukshasakam, eight verses, which is a glorification. It's a summary of this movement, which is a glorification of the Nam Sankirtan. And a glorification of Nam Sankirtan in terms of the effects of Nam Sankirtan, progressively, from Shraddha, from the basic faith, based on the glory of the holy name, all the way to the highest level of unconditional love, as experienced by Radharani. So this is a summary of Lord Chaitanya's mission. You chant the holy name, hear the glories of the holy name, experience the holy name, and develop your faith, which will bring you to the next level of faith. You may chant with appreciation, then you may chant a conviction that clothing is so good that you should get the association of those who are doing it, which will lead to a higher conviction of developing a steady practice and a higher condition of giving up those things that are unwanted with it. And that's our life in Krishna consciousness. We chant the holy name, we advance, and then we chant the holy name in a higher level of consciousness. And the higher level of dedication and consciousness in which we chant the holy name, the more we feel and invoke Krishna's kindness, which elevates us more. We advance by the pleasure of Krishna, which is our love. The more we chant with love both ways, the more we please Krishna. And the more we experience and invoke his kindness and mercy. And therefore the Shikshastakam is 8 progressive levels of chanting the holy name in higher and higher forms of consciousness. And what brings us to the higher consciousness is the deepening of humility that comes by the chanting. I was reading in one commentary, it says, just as food and hunger, described first, that food and hunger diminish each other, the more food you have, your hunger will be diminished. And the more your hunger increases, then your food is diminished. The hunger and food diminish. Hunger, food and hunger. Food diminishes hunger. Hunger diminishes food. More food, less hunger. More hunger, less food you have in you. The humility and frame are the opposite. The more frame increases humility, and humility increases frame. Frame increases humility in several ways. If the more you have prema, pranjana chita bhakti vilochena, the more you see Krishna. The more you see Krishna, the more you become humble. Because it magnifies your relative position in relationship. Pride is when you don't see your relative position in relationship to everything. If you see everything and you see God everywhere, I remember traveling in the Himalayas, and I saw the vast mountains, how big it is. It humbled me. The reverence humbled me. It made me feel tiny. It revealed my humility is knowledge. Humility is actually seeing what we are. And appreciating what we are. Appreciating the greatness of our smallness. Mahadam Mohan Bhakti, we like that article, he contributed that. Humility means appreciating the greatness of our smallness. Like the great thing is to be yourself, to realize who you are. What can be greater than that? Greatness doesn't mean to have a false conception of yourself. It means to have a real conception of yourself. Every person has a mission or has a value, an existential value, has a value in relationship to God, the service. And magnitude is not determined love. We're equal to God in love. If love has nothing to do with size. your magnitude, your majesty. Love does not have to do that, he says. In fact, we have an unlimited capacity for love. But still, when you have prema, and it reveals the absolute truth, it magnifies your own relative position. But in a way in which you can appreciate, because it is a facility to express the love of who you are, of your consciousness, is meant for reverence, it's meant for love. Either to acknowledge the greatness of of a majesty higher than you, or the greatness of a sweetness higher than you, but also because what is prema? Prema is the desire for Krishna. There's two desires. I want to be with Krishna. I want to love Krishna. I want to serve Krishna. See, your desires are increasing in prema. And desire is a hunger. The more desire you have, in love, the less you feel you have it. Even like a very wealthy man, the more that person desires money, the more he feels he doesn't have it. The richest man in the world, they're still greedy, atyahara. If it's increasing their desire for money, they don't feel they have money. They feel real money is what this person has. Real money is controlling the world. It's just so natural. So when you increase your prema, you increase your love, I want Krishna. And that becomes magnified. It magnifies the sense that you don't have it. If it's a hunger itself, the more you have that hunger, the more you're hungry. You're hungry for Krishna, the prema increases. So the whole Shikshastakam is a simultaneous development of humility and the concomitant increase in love. And therefore, between every verse in the Shikshastakam, which Krishna Das Kaviraj described, this is so significant. In every verse in the Shikshastakam, Krishna Das Kaviraj describes that there is a deepening of humility. It's actually the mood of Radha, who has she's the one with the greatest humility. Waves of humility, and that feeling and that mood. A simple analogy I thought of that gave an example of humility. Why humility is so embedded with love. Because what's the opposite of love? It's narcissistic, which means you see the world only according to your own desires. Therefore, you see the world not to be served, but to be exploited. If someone is proud, like their consciousness, they gave the example of someone who was a very heavy person in the mafia. But maybe if he loves his mother, he's humble. He's humble with his mother. He's not humble with his mother. He doesn't have love from his mother. He doesn't show love for his mother. He's humble with his mother. What does humility mean? He sees some authority in terms of what she wants. That's what love is. What that person wants. rules you. That's love. If the other person wants, you are the servant of that. The mafia person comes in, he's controlling, he's intimidating everybody, and he's with his mother. And he has, she loves him, and he has love for his mother. Then he wants to serve. He wants to surrender. Surrender means to Latin for put oneself under. And happy in that feeling. The Shastin is very interesting. Between every verse, it's a Abhidhaya, extreme humility. The first verse is the glories of the holy name of Nam Sankirtan, Lord Chaitanya hears those glories, and it says he laments and develops humility. He laments because he's feeling, I don't have that. That's the nature of love. One is never satiated. We have Bhagavatam, because the Narada Muni asked for benediction. He asked for the benediction that I'll never be satiated. But in satiation, then love stops. The Lord Chaitanya is chanting these glories in holy name. And it humbles him so much. If you're thinking, I don't have this, and he laments, I don't have this, and then his humility deepens. And then he reflects on something that's very interesting. That the greatness of God is not only his power, it's his mercy. Without mercy, God is not great. To be great, you have to have two qualities. Power and kindness. If you don't have power, you can't help one. And you don't have kindness, you don't want to help one. You have to have some kindness. And mercy is what enables one to bridge the gap between the value of Krishna, which is unlimited, and our limited ability to purchase that. You can't purchase something that's unlimited. Be yourself unlimited. The only thing that can bridge the gap is faith and mercy. If someone is merciful, then you have an opportunity to get more than you deserve, more than you can pay for. And this is the mood of a devotee. The mood of a devotee is, it's one of the symptoms of Bhava Bhakti, it's called Asha Bandha. One's hopes cannot be bound. Prabhupada said hope against hope. We have hope. We have no hope because we can't imagine that we can earn Krishna. He's so much greater than us. But then we have hope because one of the qualities of Krishna is mercy, which means he can give himself beyond our ability to pay. So, the first verse expresses the glory in which I'm not a devotee, and God is so wonderful, I don't have the qualification, he's feeling that naturally as the love in his heart. You can see that. Sometimes the person who's the most proud thinks he's the most advanced. If he doesn't have that hunger for bhakti, simply for the reason that one thinks that they're being controlled and they enjoy it. Anyway, so then what you kind of begins to reflect on God's mercy. Nanana Kali Bhakti Da. That God is so merciful that he appears in many forms and many names to help us to become absorbed in God for our own benefit. The efficacy of any process of self-realization is its ability to the degree it facilitates us becoming absorbed in the object of our meditation. So, God has unlimited names. It's so merciful. But according to the object of love we desire, God has a corresponding name that will facilitate our absorption in his name, in him. So God has unlimited names out of his mercy. We just saw the Shaktis, and they're non-different from him. And he's so merciful to Kati Tanya and Apesmanane Kalade that there's no rigid regulations or rules or timing to chant the holy name. God is so merciful, but do or die them. I am so unfortunate. And what's the greatest unfortune? Our nartis, the things that have no value to our true self. And the worst nartis is aparat. Not having no value to the true self, but extending the true self and distancing ourselves from the true self. We desire them because of that what Chaitanya is feeling, the tajasi of the kripa of the vanamapi. The diamond in Jisham, the Hajjah, that I have no raga. I have the why? Because of the senses. And this is a mood of devotion. So I'm not qualified. So now, Lord Chaitanya's humility increases again. And then Lord Chaitanya looks at him and says, now I will teach you the process represented in a verse, the process by which you can achieve love of Godhead. This love of Godhead means you're aparadhi poya by a premadas. That when you can avoid offenses, then praying will awake. Lord Chaitanya, in this humble mood of the devotee, says, I don't have any attraction. The Hajjani, I don't have attraction because I commit offenses. So now Lord Chaitanya says, I will teach you the verse that the awakening of the God. And what does that mean? The verse that will inoculate you from offenses, which is the obstacle to attaining prema bhakti. And what will inoculate one from offenses is humility. This pride is the source of all offense. When you think you are entitled as the enjoyer and controller, then you tend to see people as your competitors and you offend them. So how to conquer this pride that Chaitanya says, well, this is the verse that will help you to awaken love of Godhead. And then, Trinadapi Sunichena. Once you chant the humble, the holy name of the Lord in the humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, the power of the tree, the void of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others in such a state of mind, one can chant constantly. As the eyelids protect the eyes from noxious intrusions, humility protects the soul from offense, and therefore it's the cultivation of humility will do what? It will protect you from offense and put you in the consciousness to serve. And without the consciousness of service, there's no bhakti. Prabhupada Bhagavan Manaki. He's got the Trinadapi of this. And there's a fourfold process for awakening love of Godhead, which is humility, tolerance, respect to others, and chanting the holy name constantly. This is how to attain love of Godhead. In fact, when Raghunath Das Goswami, who is the Prayojani Acharya, the great teacher within the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of attaining prema bhakti, the main instruction that Lord Chaitanya gave him, living as a sannyasi, and then he concluded it with the verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, with the verse that expresses the utmost limit of humility, which is that once you chant the holy name in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. This is what was given to Raghunath Das Goswami when he personally came to Lord Chaitanya seeking instruction on his mission in life. Lord Chaitanya basically instructed him that you should become the Purojana Acharya by becoming absorbed in the thoughts of God and Krishna all day and chanting the holy name incessantly, and then he gave them the process how to do it. Then it describes again Lord Chaitanya's humility deepened, and then he thinks, I'm not even a devotee. But he prays for devotion. When you want to attain something, some level of consciousness, if you pray for it sincerely, then that is the path to get it. If you want love with Godhead and you sincerely pray for it, that prayer is the seed of the thing that you are praying for. So Lord Chaitanya is thinking now, he doesn't have any devotion. He prays, and what does he say? I vadanam, majanam, nasindarim, kabitamba, jagadisha kamer, mama janmani, gana ishvari, bhavatad bhaktiya, itikitri. I don't want wealth, I don't want followers, assuming I don't want beautiful women. I don't want to be aristocratic or artificially learned. I don't want. What I want is, I don't want to be a servant birth after birth. I want a hoitaki bhakti. And what does a hoitaki mean? It means causeless. So what does causeless mean? In this case, it means that you do something without motive for yourself. And the only thing you can do, and the only process you can practice without motive for yourself is bhakti, because bhakti is the only thing that's not motivated. Love means you want to please the other. You don't want something for yourself. Every other activity is motivated. You're doing it to achieve something for yourself. So he's praying for what? He's praying for pure devotion. But in that prayer, it is pure devotion. If he says, what? I don't have any other desires. That's the tattvastha lakshana and the secondary characteristics of the from a bhakti. It's, I don't want. It means I don't have the desire. I don't have material desire. So that's the tattvastha lakshana of bhakti, and bhavatad bhakti ahita chitvayi. And what I want nothing but your service. Anukriyena Krishnanu, Shena Bhakti Uttama. This perfectly expresses Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. It has two characteristics. You only want to please Krishna, and you don't want anything else, and it's not covered by karma or gas. Anyway, on this still recovering and traveling, that's what I could give today. If anyone would like to ask any questions, they can. Hope someone's still on.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I'm just saying that. Thank you for class.
Who said thank you for class? Who's that?
That was Gail.
Okay, hi, Bill. Thank you, Gail. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, I'm going to go for today.
Hi, Bill, my